Welcome to the 10-12, the podcast that covers all 10 teams in the Big 12 Conference. I'm your host, Philip Slavin. Thank you for joining us today as we continue our bonus special edition podcast series, Sell Me On, in which we're going through each of the eight Big 12 teams who remain to get an idea of kind of their selling points as far as potentially joining another Power 5 conference. So today we are shifting our focus to the state of Texas and TCU, and I'm very excited to have Melissa Treewasser. You would know her from both Frogs of War as well as the new 10-12 Network TCU podcast, Hit the Horn. Melissa, welcome.
It's good to be here, Philip. Thanks for having me on as we navigate the choppy waters of realignment once again. Yeah.
Choppy is a good word for it. You know, before we dive into TCU, the thing that's most interesting to me here is last time it all felt like we were all on the same schedule, right? There wasn't like months and months of pre-planning on one side and now everybody's thrown into a tizzy. It felt more like everyone was at the same pace. You know, like everyone was moving together in Missouri and Nebraska. Like it all felt a little bit above board, I think is the best way to describe it. Whereas this time you've have two schools and a conference who've been planning something for a long period of time, despite what they want you to think, that it's only been just a couple of months. Sure. This has been going on for a while. And so now everyone else is having to play catch up, which almost makes it even more stressful for everybody else than it even was last time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really, if the Texas fans that keep coming up to Frogs of War and wondering why we're upset about this, that's what they don't understand, is the underhanded way that this has kind of gone down has put the rest of the other eight schools in the conference in a much worse position than they were when everybody could see the end date and the writing on the wall. And sure, I guess you could argue that we could see the writing on the wall in the Big 12, but by the same token, to have it all kind of blow up in your face when, you know, I read an article in The Athletic this morning where Bob Bolt, who was, you know, he's friends with Chris Del Conte and Joe Castellone, right, at Oklahoma. And, you know, Gary Patterson said it last week in his opening press conference, too, that, you know, when TC was invited to the Big 12, he got a call from DeLost Odds. Like, that was his first call to let him know things were changing. And sure, it's easier to deliver good news than bad news. But for TCU, especially when you look at the person kind of behind orchestrating this move and Chris Del Conte, who was the one who drug the Horned Frogs kicking and screaming up to the Power Five, I don't think you can blame anybody for having some hurt feelings. This is going to impact hundreds of thousands of people in the state of Texas and Oklahoma and across the rest of the Big 12 landscape. This is going to impact jobs and futures and departments. So I understand that it's a money grab and that's what this sport has become, is just get as wealthy as you can. But to say that it's just Texas looking out for themselves and we should accept that is not really painting the entire picture.
It's a weird balance that people have a hard time with of, I get it. This is fine. This is your choice. Go forth and conquer and do what's best for you. That's fine. I don't have any problem with that. But you can't have it that way without understanding that there are consequences to the way it was done and to what is happening. It's this whole issue people seem to have a struggle with consistently in everything in life. Their freedom of choice is not the same as freedom from consequence. Mm-hmm. You can choose to do something. It's in your right to do so. You're not breaking any laws. You're not doing anything illegal. But there are consequences to every action we have, some small, some big. And you can't get mad at the consequences and people's reaction to said thing and just saying, well, you should just be okay with it. Like, because yes, as Texas and Oklahoma fans want to point out, and they're right, part of why the frustration for the other eight schools is, if we were in the same position, would we do the same thing? Yeah, sure. Of course we would all be off to the SEC. No one's arguing that whatsoever. Okay. That may be true, but what's also true is if you were in the position of the eight schools left behind, you would feel the same way that they do right now. Exactly. So let's remember to try and view things from both perspectives, because we can all have a little bit more realistic understanding and a heart-to-heart conversation on fair ground. But the problem is people don't want to come in from that situation. They want to go from the winning mindset to make sure that they don't have to feel bad about what's done. And again, this is all about fans. Fans have no impact on what's happening whatsoever. Like, no. But we're the ones left to argue on Twitter and on podcasts and social media and so on and so forth.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the thing too, that I think Texas fans are going to find out, is this move was not made with their best interest in mind. And they're going to ultimately and Oklahoma fans too, be the ones that kind of get the short end of the stick. The guy that used to be able to walk up to the University of Texas and buy a ticket game day of is no longer going to have as much access. Oh, maybe, because it's going to take a while before they win, and people in Austin can be fickle fans for sure. But, you know, we're really looking at pricing out the average fan out of college football in general. Lane Kiffin was on the Dan Le Batard show last week, and I thought he had a great quote, and that he kind of begrudgingly said, I think we're looking at two divisions, and it's going to be, you know, the powerful group and everybody else. And you can tell he kind of said it with a little bit of sadness. This is a guy who's coached at almost every level of football there is, who's, you know, whose father was in the pros for a long time. He knows where this is headed. And what's made college football so great is that it's not professional football, and it is regional, and it is more for the everyday fan, that you do have a different allegiance to your college team than your pro team, because you've financially invested in a way, or you've invested your time in a way that you don't necessarily do with the pros. And I don't think having professional football at the college level is ultimately going to be good for the average fan. I think it's going to be taking away so much of why we love this game. And so if you can see the forest for the trees, which right now, you know, Texas and Oklahoma fans are just saying money, 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 SEC recruiting. I think if you look down the line, I don't know if I like the way that the game is going. And Gary said it best last week. He said, I'm glad I'm 61 and not 31, you know, as all these changes come to pass.
Yeah. Agree. Okay. So let's talk about TCU. And I do like that you brought up that Athletic article, because we're going to bring it up here and again in a minute. Looking at TCU, what is honestly like, and trying to ask you to take off the purple shaded sunglasses and as best as you can, like, what is the true selling point for TCU if you're trying to go to Pac-12, Big Ten, AC, like, forget, take the name off the other P5 conferences and say 4A P5 conference. What is TCU's selling point?
Listen, if you listen to our commenters over at Frogs of War, I'm the most negative Nancy there is. I'm like the harbinger of doom, apparently, to our fan base. I can't tell you how many times I've been called Debbie Downer in the last 3 weeks. You know, it's a tough sell, I think, in a lot of ways. I think that as TCU fans, you can look at the program and the history of success and two decades of really consistently being an above average to on the verge of elite program and say, oh man, well, we're good at football and we've made a huge financial investment. We've got this great stadium. But at the end of the day, TCU has 80,000 living alumni, and they, you know, are a 10,000 person school, and they are a religiously affiliated school. And so how do you sell another conference on that TCU, not just as a football team, but as a university and as an athletic program? And so I think there's only one place to sell this to, and I think it's the Pac-12. I think that's the only conference that TCU makes sense with in any way, shape, or form. But if you were to say, just kind of as a blanket statement, why should TCU continue to be a Power 5 team? I'm going to try to use those same points. Look, TCU is located in Dallas-Fort Worth market. That's one of the most important media markets in the country. That maybe doesn't mean quite as much now as it did a decade ago with the way that streaming is going, but it still matters to have a footprint in that area. I think it helps recruiting. If you are looking at being a California school or a school on the East Coast, Texas does continuously produce, you know, as much talent as any state in the country, not named California and Florida. And so the more access you have to that environment, the more ability you have to tell kids, hey, we're going to be playing in your home state or near your hometown or a place your families can drive. I think that does make a little bit of a difference when you think of some of the top kids that have left Texas to go to Ohio State or Alabama, having Texas A&M or Ohio State so often playing in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I think has been a helpful tool for them to use. I think that when you look at the financial investment that TCU has made into their athletics program, not just football, but across the board, what they've done with beach volleyball and soccer and the facilities, the baseball program is obviously a super elite program as well. Even what they've done with the basketball arena, despite the fact that the team still isn't good. I think that, you know, these are all things that you can look at from the micro perspective and say, okay, there are things to offer here. my biggest selling point with the Pac-12 is that, you know, TCU has such a large California presence, period. You know, you're looking at about 800 students annually, 700 to 800 students annually that are coming from California to TCU. With the way the college system is out west right now with the UCs, kids are looking to get out of state. And when they want out of state, they still want the Division I football environment. They want those smaller class sizes. TCU is one of the most appealing options that you're going to find that's as close to the West Coast as possible. So it's a small alumni base, but it's an alumni base that has a huge foothold in California, especially Southern California. And you've got a lot of kind of natural rivalries that have progressed over the last several years with Stanford and Oregon and, you know, having played in a Rose Bowl in the last decade too. I think that there are some real just kind of natural, authentic ties to the West Coast that would make sense, especially for the Pac-12 conference. So you've got stability at the top. Jeremiah Donati recently turned down an opportunity to interview for the Missouri athletic director position. And Gary Patterson is entering his 24th season at TCU, 21st as the head football coach. And so this is a program that has national cachet. The last three seasons have been kind of garbage, but by the same token, people still know who TCU is when you go east and west. This is still a developing brand, but a brand of football that people like. They've got the cool uniforms that people notice. You see gear literally all over the world for TCU. Anywhere I've ever been, I've always ran into somebody wearing something TCU. And so I think that there is something intriguing about it as a school, as a football program. And I do think that they have something to offer on the table when you talk about what they would bring from a revenue perspective to a Power Five conference.
So one thing we're going to hit a couple of these points. One thing I've always pointed to for TCU when people try and talk about like marketing things, and the biggest concern I've always had for TCU if this were to happen was, yes, they're in Fort Worth, they're in the DFW area. That is great. It sounds good because of how many TVs are, but it's never felt like TCU is like Fort Worth's team. Like, it's never felt like the whole community and the whole city like is pro TCU and loves TCU. It is a school in a city.
I'll push back on that a little bit.
Okay.
So I'll say this. Back in the early 2000s, when Gary Patterson first became the head football coach at TCU, and this is around the time when I was ending my tenure as a student, TCU was not Fort Worth's team. For a long portion. I'm talking going back to the Southwest Conference days and before through the journey through the WAC. But Gary Patterson, when he was instilled as the head football coach, one of the first things that he did was meet with the then mayor and say, we want to be Fort Worth's team. That this school, this program, what I want to do here doesn't work unless we're working in cooperation with the city of Fort Worth. And the change for someone who lived there for so long, the change was palpable. Like you could definitely see the influence that the two entities had on each other. Patterson married a Fort Worth girl and Kelsey Patterson. She is a born and bred do or die, you know, Cowtown kid, like for sure. And so that became a big priority for him. And you know, we saw before TCU joined the Big 12, obviously DFW is one of the biggest alumni bases for pretty much every other school in the conference, except for maybe Iowa State, because it's the biggest city that's most centrally located to the most teams in that conference. And so there were so many people in DFW that had season tickets to TCU that were Texas alum or Texas Tech alum or, you know, had gone to Oklahoma or any number of schools because they were cheap and they were accessible. And you get to see your team play every few years because TCU always scheduled good out of conference. Once TCU joined the Big 12, we saw a lot of those fans hold on to their tickets because they wanted to be able to see their team play when they came to town. And that's why I think one of the misconceptions about TCU not being a good fan base is that so many people still have season tickets that went to other schools, but they've kept them as TCU. Is joined the Big 12 and now they do wear their school colors, you know, the 1 week a year that their school comes to town. But I think that relationship is a lot more symbiotic than people give it credit for. Sure, Fort Worth is a city. It is not a college town. It's not like Stillwater or you know, Lubbock or something like that. There is a lot of other things pulling for your attention in a place like Fort Worth because there's just so much to do. But I do think that the university and the city rely on each other and lean on each other. And I do think they're super invested in each other. And that was another thing that Patterson mentioned when asked about realignment last week is that he's worried for the city of Fort Worth, not just for his TCU football program, but how it's going to impact the jobs and the opportunities for people in the city that he's really adopted as his hometown.
Are you a Big 12 basketball obsessed fan and have nowhere to go for just all of your Big 12 basketball information, look no further because Midwest Madness is here just for you. We talk men's and women's basketball all year long with exclusive interviews, guests that come on to talk about each team, game recaps once the season begins, and so much more content you won't know what to deal with. So for all of your Big 12 basketball needs, Midwest Madness is your place to go. Listen on Anchor, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts.
All right, so let's speak to the religious stuff, because that's something that people like to bring up in discussion with Baylor and TCU. These are two, you know, private religious-based institutes. But the difference, as I have always seen it, is whereas Baylor has really clung to that tightly, TCU has kind of pushed themselves away from some of those direct connections. Because that is a topic with the Pac-12, that the reason that BYU has never been brought in as a member of the Pac-12 is because the religious stuff is something they don't want to deal with, and is a note for Baylor. For TCU, like how strong, I mean, we're talking about Texas Christian University, like how strong are those ties now actually?
Well, I think especially in the athletic program that you won't see TCU referred to as Texas Christian University. You'll only see it referred to as TCU. And that's been very purposeful. It's not that TCU is ashamed of its religious background, but it's also not its identifying trait in a way that it is for Baylor or BYU. And I think really the thing you have to think, everybody wants to talk about those liberals on the West Coast. I get it. Like I am a California native. I understand. And I live out here now. So I get where people are coming from. But at the same token, it's not necessarily that they're anti-religion. It's just some of the language that you find in the rule book, quote unquote, for BYU and Baylor is very off-putting to people who tend to be a little bit more socially liberal. And I don't want to say open-minded because that could offend some people, but let's just call it what it is, open-minded when it comes to people's personal choices. And so I think that TCU doesn't have the anti-LGBT language in their student handbook that Baylor is still trying to get rid of and scrub a little bit, and that BYU is very openly kept a part of their mission. They don't have any restrictions about playing on Sunday, nor does Baylor. And let's be honest too, like at the end of the day, if Baylor has a chance to save its skin financially, they're probably going to do everything they can to dump as much of that language as possible. But the Disciples of Christ, the entity that founded TCU, is one of the more liberal branches of the church for sure. And so I don't think that there's anything precluding TCU from joining, say, the Pac-12 strictly on a religious standpoint. People I've talked to across that conference that are pretty well connected have said that if TCU is going to not be asked to join the Pac-12, it's not going to be because of the C in the middle of the name. It's going to be because they don't see any value that can be added by adding a TCU specifically or a Baylor specifically or a Texas Tech. So this game is about money, and we all like to stand on our values and the things that are important to us, but also that we've seen in college football that those will go to the wayside really quickly if it means the opportunity to fill the coffers a little bit more. So I don't think that the religious aspect is going to be what does TCU in when realignment is said and done.
So looking at the current landscape and this stuff, I mean, look, folks, we're 2 weeks in. We're 2 weeks in. I know it feels like it's been 6 months already since that Houston Chronicle article came out, but we're 2 weeks in, essentially. Things have changed. Things have stalled, which makes sense because, again, of course, Oklahoma and Texas, they may want you to think that they haven't been doing anything since late spring. This has been going on for 6 to 12 months, so it's going to take the rest of the conferences and the rest of college football to kind of figure out where things are going and where they want to be. But if you had to ask me today, I think the ACC stands pat, and I think the Big Ten stands pat. The Big Ten doesn't need to add teams, mm-hmm. and the ACC, I don't think ESPN's going to let them, because just remember who's actually pulling these puppet strings, and it's TV dollars from the ESPN. So that kind of leaves the Pac-12, and they're in a weird, precarious situation. Their conference network doesn't make much money, doesn't make enough. They're trying to figure out the future. They have a new commissioner. And so I think if anyone is looking at all of the options, just like the Big 12 is, it is the Pac-12, which makes it the most likely landing spot if teams are going to find one. You mentioned the Athletic article. I read it as well. And they talked about how the three Texas teams left are kind of teaming up, kind of keeping tabs with each other, working together, Texas Tech, TCU, and Baylor. And I've thought if the Pac-12 does decide to expand, the question is how many do they go to? And it makes sense. It makes more sense to me to add multiple Texas schools with their presence than to add one, because none of them has the presence of the University of Texas. That's the reality. I don't mean that as a knock or insult to anybody. And if you want to argue, that's fine. We can all wear our fan glasses. It's cool. But I also kind of note, like, if one of them gets the call-up, it's going to be like the scene at the end of the Jungle Book when Mowgli sees the girl and follows him into the human village and leaves Baloo and Bagheera behind, because that's, you know, we're all going to chase the pretty girl and the bro code goes out the window real quick. For TCU, if you look at the other schools, Baylor and Texas Tech, you know, working together makes a lot of sense. But realistically, like, what do you think is the more likely option? Going along with them, or TCU being able to get called up on its own?
I mean, I feel like we've developed this really odd kinship with Baylor here over the last couple of weeks, and it's kind of terrifying to me as a TCU fan. But I'll tell you right now, Baylor, in addition to the Baptist aspect of the religion, that scandal's too fresh, and I don't think if you are trying to find your own footing, you want to tie yourself to Baylor. I think it sounds really, really good when you're talking to the Texas politicians and trying to, you know, do these lawsuits or whatever else. All the other three Texas schools, we got to stick together. But and again, like this, I don't want to you know, crap on my Baylor friends that actually have like three of those now. But at the end of the day, like, that's just not, you don't want to say it's, well, we're going together, or we're not going at all with the school that is still so fresh, one of the biggest, most disturbing scandals in college football history. So they win and they've got a basketball national championship, but this is not about basketball. This is about football only. Like, that's what this is going to happen with realignment. That's why I don't really buy the Kansas, the Big Ten stuff. I think that what you're doing, if you're Jeremiah Donati, I hope, and again, this just makes us hypocrites for all the complaining we've been doing about Texas and Oklahoma, right? Is that you're saying all the right things when you're with those other two programs. And yeah, guys, we're going to stick together. We're going to make this happen. And then you're getting home by yourself and you're making phone calls on a private line saying, Hey, George, like, we don't need to stay with those guys, man. We're like, well, whatever's best, we'll do whatever you say. I do think that there's a chance that all four of those schools band together and join the Pac-12 as a unit. But at the end of the day, if it's us or them, then TCU is going to say, we're going to do what's best for us, because unlike Baylor, we didn't get the life raft when the Southwest Conference broke up. You know, they were very, very quick to dump on us and say no, because we had the scandal at the time, right? We were the cheaters along with SMU. We just weren't as good at it. and didn't get caught as badly. I think that Jeremiah Donati's job is to do what's best for TCU in this moment. And that if that means talking out of both sides of his mouth, then hopefully he learned a lot from Chris Del Conte and is a little bit better at that than we think, because that's what he's going to have to do in order to make it work. So I think it'd be cool to keep those rivalries together. I think it'd be good for the state of Texas. I think it'd be awesome for Oklahoma State and the three remaining Texas schools to be together. It'd be good for college football. It'd be good for regional rivalries. But at the end of the day, if you're telling me the Pac-12 has only taken two and they want Texas Tech and TCU, then, you know, I'm sorry, Baylor, but you know, TCU's gotta go. We got put in this position. We gotta do what's best for us.
Yeah. I think this is what's so weird right now, is this, the eight teams kind of banding together publicly, whatever. Because they have to right now. Like, that's it is a talking about both sides. You've got to band together to make sure you get every penny and nickel out of Oklahoma and Texas before they leave. But you also on the back end are making sure that you're not shutting your off to any potential opportunities. Yep. Because look, if the remaining eight stick together and add schools, which I have a hard time seeing that not being what's going to happen eventually.
I agree.
Like, they're going to need the money and they're going to need to put on a public face. But if an opportunity comes for one or two of them, like, the situation would be similar. They're going to figure out how to pay the buyout, but you're going to have to go. Because if there's no combination, and I think you have to add four and get back to 12 the way it's supposed to be. There's no combination of four schools you add that gets you back to the $35 million, $38 million a year, plus whatever your third tier rights are. Like, it's just not an option.
Yeah.
So, and I think I've said this, and I can't remember if I say it 100 times on my show or if I just run through my head 100 times, but as a fan of Oklahoma State and of a school whose athletic department is as robust as it is and is competing into postseason from the beginning of September through May and June in a variety of sports, That's what sucks the most to me. You as a TCU fan, TCU is one of the best baseball programs in the sport. And I realize that most athletic departments don't spend a ton on baseball. They're able to do so without having to. Like, if you think the major cuts are going to come to football, they're not. Everyone's going to have to spend on football because that's the breadwinner, mm-hmm. which means you're making your cuts to your basketball, your Olympic sports, your soccer, your baseball, your softball, your other sports like that. Or for TCU, which I found out they have beach volleyball, which is hilarious and awesome to me, and I've got to get the head coach on because I need to understand how TCU has beach volleyball as a sport.
Hey, they made it to the Elite Eight this year. One of only eight teams to go to the playoffs, so...
There you go. See, I love the random other sports. But like, as a TCU fan and as a fan, I know a frog ball, which also is cool. That's what's bothering me the most is, and I get it. Like, we don't care. They need to live and die, blah, blah, blah. We can be that way, whatever. And maybe it's to share the wealth of me. But like, I love the other sports. I mean, I love college softball. And what sucks the most is, like, you're going to see OU and Texas go off, and they're already good at softball, and they're going to join the conference that gets all their teams in because they bitch and moan about it if they don't. Literally all their teams, and they all got mad because one didn't get into the postseason this year, and just shut up. I hate that all these other sports are going to be the ones who feel the brunt of it.
Well, and that's you know, been a big part of my argument is that, you know, first of all, as a female coach, you know, there are so few opportunities for women to play Division I college sports. It's so hard when you compare the numbers. It's even more rare almost in some instances in some sports for scholarships than it is for men. But you know, that the minute that you go from a $38 million annual athletic department revenue for your rights to even 17 or 25, like, okay, you got to cut $13 million from the budget annually. Where's that going to start? Well, they're going to say, okay, well, we just added beach volleyball, not a lot of loyalty to that. Well, let's cut that. Well, then you cut those 8 scholarships or whatever it is. Now you got to go cut 8 scholarships from something else. Well, okay, TCU doesn't have that many sports. Those 8 scholarships might come from track. Or you say, well, we got to cut the baseball budget. You know, TCU is a private school. Baseball is a sport that offers 11.7 scholarships. That means that most of these guys are paying somewhere between $20,000 and $30,000 annually to play baseball at TCU because they don't give a lot of full rides unless you're Luke and Baker. You're paying. And so some of that money is made up with academic scholarships. Some of that money certainly comes from need-based aid, but there's a lot of angel funds around that TCU baseball program too. And so maybe you say, well, we got to cut into that. And so now you're looking at recruiting, you're having more issues recruiting to a private school baseball program, which is already one of the hardest things to do in the world. Equestrian, you know, that's an expensive sport. It is very expensive to run an equestrian program. You know that as an Oklahoma State alum. So where does it, now you're taking, you're looking, you know, TCU don't have the 35 sports that Stanford and Texas and I think Oklahoma State probably has, but they still have quite a few. And if you go from 24 sports to 20, that makes a huge difference in just the way that your program is seen. You know, when you look at what happened during the pandemic and how many schools cut, like just flat out cut non-revenue sports, that's what's going to happen. And that's less opportunities. You know, Victor Vecchini has a way of saying things that are factual in a way that's like super off-putting. It's one of his skill sets, a chancellor at TCU. But he talked about how, you know, the Big 12 dissolving ultimately would be worse for female students at TCU and be worse for minority students at TCU. And he said it in a way that was just so back-ass words, but what he said, I think at heart was true. These sports, this money, this brings in opportunities to give people who wouldn't have a chance to go to TCU financially an opportunity. It doesn't just impact the athletic programs. You're talking about changing the entire landscape as a whole at your university. I graduated from TCU in 2001. I moved away from Texas in 2004. When I came back in 2011, or 12, I don't remember, the university itself looked completely different. Like the actual landscape of the university looked completely different. Like these are things that happen when you infuse money into your athletic department. And when you take money out of your athletic department, that all starts moving backwards. So this is a huge deal for these schools who aren't Texas and Oklahoma, who aren't blue blood programs. You're talking about legitimately taking resources off the table that have given opportunities to folks that wouldn't otherwise have a chance to go to these schools. And that's kind of the unintended consequence of two schools deciding to grab every single penny that they can.
Well, and nobody beats the drum harder than Matt Brown of Extra Points that cutting sports does not actually save you money. In the long run, it actually costs you money because a lot of the times what you're cutting are sports that aren't full scholarships for the full roster. So you're cutting spots for a lot of students who are paying to go to school there but want to play that sport. Now, all of a sudden, yeah, you save a little bit of money in staff and operating costs, but you are, from the athletic department standpoint, but you are losing money from a university standpoint because those are students who are probably going to look to go elsewhere that you are no longer going to have. So if you lay it out most of the time, you're actually going to lose money as a university and save a small amount as far as an athletic department. It doesn't really even out based off what you're, because you're not cutting football. You're not going to cut men's basketball. You're going to cut volleyball or equestrian or beach volleyball or swimming and diving and things of that nature, where most of those student athletes are paying to go to school there.
You know, what's interesting about that too, that it kind of made me think of, is that when TCU, TCU was, it's a good academic school. Like, I'm not going to sit here and crap on my degree, but it's not like this is an elite academic institution, right? It's a very good school, and you pay as much for the experience as you do for the education, unless you're in like Neely or the nursing program, which I think are really, really good. But I was a film major, so what do I know? but when TCU played the Rose Bowl, their average applications for each spot more than doubled. So they went from receiving, I want to say like 8,000 to 10,000 applications a year for approximately 2,000 spots in the freshman class to over 25,000. And that has only continued to increase with the exposure that the Big 12 has brought. And when you look at TCU's footprint across the country of where people are coming from, you know, it used to be kind of Kansas City and Texas, and that was it. And now it's California and Texas and the East Coast. And, you know, people are literally coming from all over the country to come to TCU, creating a more diverse, more interesting, more selective student body. And ultimately that's made it a better university, and it's helped the academic reputation. It's helped it become more selective. And so when you drop down and you lose that national exposure, is TCU going to become more of a regional university too because of that? Like, that's something else. I think that they can pretty much pick and choose who they want at this point from a student, and that's what's enabled them to do a lot of the community scholarship programs that they've done. But if they lose that platform, are they going to lose some of those applications? And are people going to be less interested in discovering who TCU is if they're no longer one of the prime players when it comes to football?
Yeah, agreed. Let's wrap on this. As an Oklahoma State fan, and as a TCU fan, I've also made a lot of comparisons between Mike Gundy and Coach Patterson. For a variety of reasons, longest tenured, long at their school, best coaches their schools have ever had, both on the back end of their careers, both having up and down periods now. And a lot of conversation has been, really the last couple of seasons, like, we know they're on the back end, and we know that the end will come soon. No one knows when, neither will be fired, but they'll both basically get to ride off in the sunset whenever they want. Both are very well compensated, and if the Big 12 stays together, they're going to have a very real, interesting situation to deal with. On the hand of one, the last thing you want to deal with while going through some sort of conference realignment situation and massive shift is to have to replace your head coach. Like, you want that continuity to help guide your program through all of the mess that's coming. And that would make a lot of sense, both with Gundy and Patterson. At the same time, both are making a fairly large amount of money. And if you're going to see an athletic department, I mean, haircut, that's a conversation that's going to have to be had of, can you pay a head football coach the amount that you're currently paying them if you're not bringing in the revenue you're bringing in? So I'm not sure I have a question here. It's more a thought that's been rolling through my head of, like, I'm going to be really interested to see how things play out with both Patterson and Gundy if, in fact, TCU and Oklahoma State stay in a reworked Big 12 whenever that comes, and you see significant cuts to the athletic department, of, you don't want to make that change because you need to get settled with two guys who know how to lead the program, but you're also going to have really awkward conversations about, like, hey, it's not that you're worse, but we don't have the money anymore.
Yeah. You know, I think Patterson's in such an interesting position because I think that his intention all along has been to walk away at the end of his contract in 2024, a contract that was extended to expire with the grant of rights, which, you know, is also an interesting kind of a little side note. But I think he's ready. Like, I think he'd like to get TCU back up to its winning ways, put a coach in waiting in place, and then go, you know, do his thing. Like, this is a man who not only is a music artist, but likes to travel and has so many interests outside of just coaching college football. He's never wanted to just die on the sidelines. Like, that's not who he is. I think he looks at what Bob Stoops is doing with his life and goes, that looks pretty fun. Like, I'd like to do that. But he'll stay until TCU settled. Like, I can promise you that he will do whatever it takes from a vocal perspective to make sure that TCU finds a landing spot. And if he thinks that there's a chance for them to be swooped up by another Power Five conference, and he'll sign an extension or whatever he does to give the aura of stability. But the minute that that is settled and TCU safe, he's going to walk away. Like, I have zero doubt in that whatsoever. And he should, he's earned that right. I also think, like, here's the thing. And Oklahoma State's not much different of a situation too. Like, there are the salaries that you put on the books, and then there are other ways to compensate your head coaches. And there are plenty of boosters with plenty of money that even if the athletic department revenue changes, those guys' pocketbooks don't change whatsoever. And so I think that while you may see both of those guys take a public pay cut in the name of the good of the university, I don't think anything is going to change about their financial situation whatsoever. So I think Patterson is at this point, like, he is TCU. Like, these two are intertwined to the death, you know, like, that's just the way it is. And so he'll do whatever he needs to for public perception and do whatever he needs to that's best for the university. But at the end of the day, I don't worry about Gary not being taken care of in the way that he is now.
Yeah. I think you start seeing Gary singing some songs on some local commercials just to help sure. cut that check. I mean, it makes sense. Like, because I've thought for a while, like, Gundy similarly probably has a similar end date as Gary. And Gundy's son is now part of the Oklahoma State football roster. Once his son is done, it always seemed like it made sense for Gundy to then ride off into the sunset on his tractor and that kind of be the end of it. So I am interested to see how that's going to play out with the two of them over the duration of the next 4 or 5 years, however that pans out.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Melissa, this has been awesome. I really appreciate you taking some time to join us. Do me a favor, for everybody who wants to check out the work you do, being the Debbie Downer of the TCU fan base. Where can they do so?
You can catch me at The Coach Melissa on Twitter and at frogsaward.com, where we're publishing a lot of content, realignment based, fall camp based, all of those types of things. So plenty of information for TCU fans or fans of other teams who are looking to find out what the Horned Frogs are up to. And then, of course, you can check out the Hit the Horn podcast. Episode 2 dropped this morning. We'll be getting my co-host Colin Post back in the fold, hopefully next weekend, as he returns from working at summer camp all the last couple of months. And I'm excited about what we're going to be putting together for you guys this fall and on to basketball season.
Yeah, I'm very excited to have a TCU podcast, specifically a TCU podcast hosted by you and Colin. It's a great show. It's a great start. Everybody go check out Hit the Horn. It's available everywhere. If you can follow our podcast, you'll find it there as well. Melissa, I will continue to talk some more throughout the season, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.